now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Yoda voyages into the heart of the galaxy to an ancient world that is one of the wellsprings of the Force and the source of midichlorians. Yoda undergoes difficult trials administered by the five priestesses, mysterious Force wielders who hold the secret to immortality. There will be Gollum Yoda, Ahsoka! Another episode that I would rank in the top five most important Clone Wars episodes. We'll see if Chris agrees. We're talking Destiny this week. How you doing, Chris?
Destiny. I wouldn't say Ahsoka. I would say Ahsoka.
Yeah, I actually have a note, because remember how in the season five wrap up you were like, well, do you think, like, will we get to see Ahsoka again? And I was like, yes and no.
Yeah. Yeah, the voice actress got work for sure.
I was like, technically, yes and no. You'll see. This is what I was talking about. You have a good week?
So far, so good.
That's good.
It's only Monday, so. But yeah, since the last time we talked, yeah, hasn't been bad. It's definitely fall here.
It's not fall here. We are 15 degrees above average. We're still pushing 90s. And I'm just like, Damn it. I'm like ready for my sweaters and my hats and to curl up and be in my kigurumi and just be like, yeah. But no, I can't because it's fucking 89 degrees outside.
Yeah, we're there now. I'm not in a sweater, but I'm in a hoodie.
Oh.
It's raining outside.
Very upset. I wanted cold. I want to be a white girl and drink my pumpkin spice latte and be like, yes, I want it. I want
you
a cruise.
Still get your pumpkin spice latte. That just comes out. It's not dependent on the weather.
No, it tastes better when it's cold. And you're just like, yes, this is fall. It's like ice cream. I love eating ice cream when it's cold because it tastes better when it's cold outside.
Oh, I eat ice cream all year round.
I mean, I eat ice cream all year round, too, but there's something special about, like, going to Brewster's when it's outside in, like, November, and it's like 40 degrees outside, and you're getting ice cream, and it just tastes better when it's cold. Maybe because it doesn't melt as fast, and it's just, oh, it's so good. I love ice cream when it's cold outside. I know. Well, if I don't eat it on a cone, I wait for it to melt, and I eat it like soup.
I like having a bowl of it, and then the edges of it are getting mushy and squishy, and I can have I can spoon up nice firm ones, but then get some nice squishy, you know, mushy, soupy ice cream too. It also depends on the flavor of ice cream too.
Yes. Though I have been known to, since I love melted ice cream so much, I've been known to like put ice cream in the microwave just enough to melt it and then eat it while it's still soup. I'm a weird person. I like my soupy ice cream unless it's cold outside, and then I like it on a cone.
I've been eating this ice cream that's basically, it's not officially Girl Scout cookies, but it's basically crunched up Girl Scout cookies and then bands of, like, you know, just fudgy chocolate through it. It's good, and vanilla ice cream.
Is it Thin Mints? Those are my favorite.
Well, they're not real Thin Mints because it's not Girl Scout, you know, branded or whatever. But it's basically Thin Mints. Yeah, it's basically crushed up Thin Mints in ice cream with, yeah, sort of. It's not really like chocolate syrupy, but it's there's bands of chocolate in it that are kind of fudgy and melty. It's good.
That sounds amazing.
We were at the store today, though, and my roommate's like, "Oh, you gonna buy any candy?" And I'm like, "No, I got enough candy, and I'll be eating it tonight. I'm all set on candy."
Oh, so did you like the episode?
I did like this episode.
Except for your fan fiction.
This does mess more with my potential fan fiction, for sure. This explicitly mentions some of the thematic ideas of my fan fiction, but I would still do it anyway.
I was so on the fence whether or not you would like this episode. I was like, I could see Chris really liking this episode, or because I thought you were gonna like Mortis,
This is like the good version of Mortis, basically. This episode.
I absolutely agree.
But also I'm thinking, I don't want to call it my fan fiction. Nothing against fan fiction, but what I'm really hoping is that somebody at Lucasfilm, one of the hundreds of Lucasfilm employees that listen to this podcast,
will go,
"Man, we got to get Honeywell for the animated Yoda movie that we need to do someday," because I don't know, I just have the feeling he'd really knock it out of the park.
It also shows that
my ideas of where Yoda's character arc goes in this particular time period were pretty much aligned with where Filoni and the writers of these episodes were going, of what Yoda had to do character wise to get from the prequel era to Empire Strikes Back. I never thought of a Gollum Yoda though, so
that was awesome.
Points for that. Especially since basically, yeah, you just take a couple pounds off Yoda and wrinkle him up a little more, and he's Gollum already.
I absolutely forgot about that part, and so when he showed up and he was like, "He doesn't play with us anymore," and I was like, "Oh my god, it's Gollum." Straight up Gollum.
Trixie.
Like, "Play with us, precious. Don't deny us, precious." And I was like, "Oh god, it's freaking Gollum." Like, even talks like him, only in a Yoda voice.
Yep, basically a cracked out Frank Oz.
Well, I am very ready to get started on this episode. Are you?
Yes, I know you're tired, so.
Yes, I have a real person schedule now, and I'm having to shift my sleep schedule.
Hope's a big girl.
Because before I was a closing manager, so I would go to work at like 1 or 2, which means I would wake up at 10 and I would stay up till like 3 a.m., which was perfect for me because I've always been a night person. Even when I was a kid, I was a night person. Like, I always function better at night. Well, now that our store is closed and I'm working online, I have to be where I work at 10, which means I have to wake up at 8, and I haven't fully shifted my sleep schedule yet, and it's still lagging. And I moved a store for 3 days, had one day off, and had to go back to work this morning. So I'm very tired. But it's coming along.
Yeah, your body will adapt.
Yeah. It's just not adapting fast enough for me.
Or not.
I was at work today just like, because I'm inputting all of our customers into the online system, and I was just like staring at a screen and like trying. I was like, I have to put on music because I'm sitting in silence and about to fall asleep on this keyboard. So I just, I'm very tired.
Yeah, I do 10-hour days, but I only have to be there, I don't have to be there till 11 o'clock either. So that's really nice.
Yeah. Well, you ready?
I'm ready.
Destiny is the 120th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on March 7th, 2014. It was written by Christian Taylor and directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Some extra information for you. Jamie King is the voice of the Force Priestesses. She was also the voice of Aura Singh in Clone Wars. All right, and pay attention to these, because a couple of these notes I'm going to pull back up in my notes. So, in an interview with Dave Filoni, indicated that the Force Priestesses may be one being who could become five over a long period of time, saying, the way I reconcile that being is actually one being. It's one ancient being separated over time that for our perception to be able to see her, she is these many different iconic things presented to us. But she died long, long, long time ago and is conscious in the Force, and she has a limited ability to manifest. Through the Yoda arc, though the Yoda arc implied that Qui-Gon had learned from the Force priestesses and directed Kenobi to them as well, canon material from the official databank and the now-defunct encyclopedia on StarWars.com still refer to Jyn as having learned from the Shaman of the Wills, the ancient Order of the Wills, having first been referenced in the novelization of the original Star Wars film. At the Wellspring of Life, I had to throw in some Rebel stuff, guys. At the Wellspring of Life, the secrets of immortality lay within the Virgins and was explicitly tied to the Force priestesses that roamed the land. A Virgins, sometimes described as a fulcrum, because I just have to throw in that Rebels reference, was a location concentration of the Force that could be centered around a person, such as Anakin Skywalker, or a location, such as the Jedi Temple on Lothal, another Rebels reference, the Temple of Edet on Deveron, the Jedi Temple on Ilum, and the Cave of Evil on Dagobah, Mortis, and, as we see in this episode, the Wellspring of Life. And then I actually jumped ahead to Rebels. So, in the Rebels episode, The Wolves in the Door, the Imperial archaeologist had several stone tablets and artwork in his office. You can actually see the Force priestesses on one of the tablets. Also, much of the background designs in The Wellspring of Life is similar to the World Between Worlds that we saw in Rebels Season 4. Yoda's confidence in his own abilities and knowledge as he begins his journey is reminiscent of Luke Skywalker's certainty when he meets Yoda on Dagobah. This episode exposes Yoda to many of the key lessons that he would later impart to Luke, including the philosophy of serenity and peace over war. This episode bridges the reality of Yoda, the battlefield general of the prequels, to Yoda, the one who dismisses war and the Empire Strikes Back. As Yoda walks through the ruined Jedi Temple hallway, an echo of the Battle of Heroes theme from Episode 3 can be heard. Count Dooku discusses an encounter with the Tarantatak on Kashyyyk. Tarantataks were fearsome creatures first introduced in Star Wars lore in the 2003 game Knights of the Old Republic. And finally, when the Serene Force Priestess pulls off her mask to reveal Empty Roads, it's meant to be reminiscent of Obi-Wan's empty robes falling when he is struck down by Darth Vader in A New Hope. I know, I was like, Rebels references, let's read all of them. that's one of my big things, and I'll talk about it later, is just how much the later canon builds on episodes like this. And so I was just like, well, I want to go ahead and talk about these, even though we're not at Rebels yet, because Rebels built on this episode, and as we see in Rebels.
We're very close to Rebels. This is the penultimate episode of Clone Wars until they make more.
For the time being, yeah, until we get the next season. So, by the way, this is by far the creepiest platitude. Like, this beats all the other ones of how creepy it is. I don't know, Yoda. This one might be a little bit too much even for you.
Oh, no. Yoda has stories.
Not
what you think. Dirty mind you have.
Are you sure?
Death is just the beginning. In bed?
Are you saying that you've been with dead people?
Maybe.
Yo.
A point of view, a certain one, yes. five priestesses.
I was just about to say, what do you think of these priestesses?
Six women. Not alive they are. Sometimes you must reach deeper into the Force. Only problem? Qui-Gon watches. Yoda's not uptight or anything, but...
Who was your favorite Force priestess?
Angry face. Much fire in angry face.
Angry face.
It's Jedi sex, though. They are all the same, but five. Only makes sense to Jedi Master.
I'm just waiting to see how far you go.
On video, if you'd like to see.
No, I'm good. All right.
On Holocron it is.
Act one?
Holocron X.
Kanan and Ezra find that in Rebels, and they're like, ah!
Just a picture of Yoda in a bathrobe. It's an X-rated novel.
They're like, hey, Maul, we found this Holocron, haven't? Maul's like, yes, the Holocron! And he opens it, and he's just like, oh, God! Did you see the how it should have ended with Solo?
I have not yet.
Oh, man. It's wonderful.
It's good. Okay.
I liked it if only, well, A, because it's Donald Glover, they make a This Is America reference. But also Han, I think at some point, like yells at Darth Mon. He's like, are you her new boyfriend? Who are you? Hornhead? And Maul's like, oh, Hornhead! It was wonderful. I love those guys,
That's
though.
That's Daredevil's nickname.
But they actually, like, go there because, like, Han's like, I'm so tired from all these wars and the stars. Why are there so many wars and the stars every year?
I just got a copy of Solo to watch it again, so for a second time. I haven't watched it since I saw it in the movies, so I'm curious to see how I feel about it the second time.
I've been wanting to rewatch that, and I still haven't seen Last Jedi since the one time I saw it in the theaters. I keep meaning to, like, take a night to, like, sit down and watch Last Jedi, and I just haven't got around to it.
I've watched Last Jedi probably, like, 8 times since I saw it in the theater.
I need to see it again. I really do.
That's one of those movies where it's just like, I need to kill 20 minutes, I'll watch 20 minutes of it just for something to do. If I feel like, I'm eating a snack and I want to watch something that doesn't involve 2 hours or a lot of paying attention.
Apparently, in the comic adaptation, they actually go more into Luke's point of view. And, like, you're in Luke's head as he's, like, taking care of, like, Jen and, like, watching her and stuff like that. But, like, you actually get Luke's last thoughts before he vanishes.
I'd like to read the novelization to this one, too, and
yeah,
see if that stuff's in there, too.
Yeah, apparently it adds a lot. But the comic adaptation did a lot with it as well. From what I hear, like, you actually get, like, Luke's last thoughts and stuff. And it was something along the line of, like, right before he vanishes, like, this is only the beginning. Or something like that, so.
Sounds about right. About open-ended enough.
Yeah, and it actually fits very much with this episode of, like, Yoda.
Yeah, you gotta be.
The life after death. Death is just the beginning. It's the platitude in bed. All right, act one.
Act one.
All right, a lot is going on here, so here we go. Yoda started hearing the voice of Qui-Gon Jinn. All the Jedi Council was like, that can't be possible. He's dead. And they thought Yoda was losing his mind. And so did Yoda. So, but with a little digging and a road trip to Dagobah with R2-D2, Yoda found out that there was more to the Force than what he thought. He talked with Qui-Gon, who said that there is more to the Force with life after death, and Yoda needs to go to the Wellspring of Life, or whatever, and learn how to be a Force ghost. Will this be like the Great Rebels episode, A World Between Worlds, or will this be the Mortis arc? Which apparently Chris and I are the only ones who hated it in the fandom. Let's find out! Yoda flies his little TIE fighter, aka the Tiny Fighter, towards a nebula that the Force has led him to. He tries to pilot his ship, but both the Tiny Fighter and R2 start short-circuiting. Yoda closes his eyes and lets the Force guide him to the nebula. He lands on a planet with Avatar the Last Airbender / Legend of Korra spirit portals everywhere, which is fitting because Dave Filoni worked on Avatar as well. He lands at one of the beams of life, and he and R2 hops out. Yoda notes that this place is hella strong in the Force, and he gives R2 his lightsaber, then gets back into his tiny fighter, leaving R2 behind, and flies down into one of the holes in the ground, spewing out golden spirit portal light. there's a world underground above. There's a world underground, the above world. What did I write? That is very similar to the floating islands on Mortis. And for the record, I did like those. I did like the first episode of Mortis. So, and he stands on one of the floating islands that's lush with planets and life with animals flying around. Suddenly, he hears a woman calling his name. An orb flies down and brightens up, revealing a masked woman. She's the Force Priestess Serenity. So eat your heart out, Sailor Moon. And I know I'm the only one that gets that joke here on this podcast, but whatever. Anyway, the Priestess says that they've been expecting Yoda since they study all who are strong in the Force in the universe. They must begin, and she leads him into the woods. And I ended Act 1 here because there was a screen wipe, so I know not a lot have happened. So yeah. What'd you think of Act 1, Chris?
Yeah, this one was really definitely very difficult to break up into acts for sure. It was almost like one big complete act. It was. I just wrote my notes and I'm like, I'll just draw a line wherever Hope's notes end. I really like, my first note was, this is already better than Mortis. This is more like what I picture the Force is, more nature-based.
There's animals.
Yes, it's more nature-based and less D&D-based. So, automatically I'm liking it better than Mortis. It feels more like Star Wars, even though it does feel like Avatar, but the Avatar, James Cameron Avatar with the blue people. The planet, it's very much like, what was it, Pandorum, I think was the name of the planet in that.
This is actually very Avatar The Last Airbender, like with the animal, like in the spirit realm, a lot of the plants look very similar to the spirit. Well, the coloring is different. The coloring is very different.
It's but, like, very much like the Avatar movie, too.
Yeah, so, but like, it made sense to me because, like, Dave Filoni worked on Avatar, so I can definitely see, like, so many references to that show. I actually make multiple notes about that.
And I think a lot of the people he brought with him, too, were also people he worked with in his past in that, you know, capacity.
That I don't know for sure, but I wouldn't be surprised.
The minute I saw the priestess woman, she looks a lot like, she reminds me of the aliens in Indiana Jones in the Crystal Skull movies, which, since there being Indiana Jones, like, and later on there's another part in here that's very, very Crystal Skull-like, too, involving them. But that's all I had for that part. I thought it was, visually really beautiful. It's fun to have R2... I love it when R2's talking and, you know, somebody understands him and, you know, R2 just was asking this question or that, you know, or it's neat. And also for that me, the Force sort of knocks R2-D2 out a little bit.
Yeah. Well, he is the hero of Star Wars, and so he does have to be taken down a few picks.
Yeah, right. Force doesn't like a robot being one of the major movers and shakers.
Well, for me, I do like some of the similarities they kept with Mortis, because when Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka landed on Mortis, they went through this bright light before it revealed it, and Yoda went through the same thing, too. So I like that they kept some of the similarities that, like, this is the Force, and it's very similar. Well, just like you, I actually love the look of the Wellspring of Life and how it varies from Mortis, though, again, I will put all on record that I actually do like the look of Mortis. But I like that it's more lived in. It feels like where Mortis felt very clean and pristine, this actually feels very lived in. Like, the plants are, like, dirty, and they're, like, giving off spores, and you see animals. There's no animals on Mortis. And, like, you see these, like, and Yoda's, like, smiling up at these animals. So, like, to me, where Mortis felt very, like, they're moving through, like, a still picture, this actually felt like life. Like, this is the Wellspring of Life, and there's life here. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, and I could see maybe they're going for having this place in Mortis being two different, you know, and, like, and you have the family in Mortis, although they weren't really what, they didn't seem to be, you know, like, these guys, someone who's died, and they're just sort of alive in the Force. They seem to be these sort of
gods,
immortal characters and stuff, which just doesn't really feel very Force-like. This might be, you know, that might have been a more, you know, just sort of the, for lack of a better word, the technical aspect of the physical aspect of the, you know, like the sort of ideas of the Force, whereas this planet is the physical, natural, living aspect of the Force, you know, the biological and the natural, you know, life aspect of the Force, whereas that was only really manifested by the daughter, but she was just like goodness, you know, so she was just like white light was sort of her, this has nature, you know. And you feel the priestess is probably, you know, intimately connected into that because of the way when she moves through it, all the plants get out of her way. And, you know, she's totally, you know, built into the whole thing.
Yeah, like to me, like this felt like it was the Force. Mortis felt like it was God's in a play about the Force. Like it was very still to like we are people and they're gods playing for us opposed to them.
It was very D&D. Yeah, it felt like something a dungeon master came up with.
Yeah, I can't deny that. And my last note was, you know that Dave Filoni is a Hayao Miyazaki fan because so many of his like big Force characters, does the God of the Forest from Princess Mononoke thing. So, like, when they touch the ground, like, plants just spring out of their feet. It's a very Hayao Miyazaki thing, and whenever he has a big Force character, there's always something very similar to that.
Well, was there a character in Princess Mononoke, now that you mention it, in one of his movies that looked very much like these women?
You know, there was the little tree spirits that, like, they were little, and they would turn their heads and go, ka-ka-ka-ka-ka-ka. But, like, I was thinking more like the God of the Forest, like, when he would walk, like, plants would spring up and then die around his feet. And, like, when Serenity touched down, like, plants grew from where she touched. So, and then she would, like, touch another plant and it would die. So, it was very Princess Mononoke, very Hayao Miyazaki feel, so. And that's my last note, because my only other note was, were you getting Mortis feelings up to this point? It was a good or bad, and you answered it right away, so never mind.
Good, yeah.
But that's all I have for Act 1. The majority of my notes are actually in Act 2 and 3.
Yeah, mine too. Well, I don't have an awful lot of notes. My notes are just sort of springboards for stuff to talk about, but yeah.
I have notes.
Really?
Yeah. Surprise, surprise. Well, you ready? Act 2?
I'm ready.
Act 2. Serenity is leading Yoda through the woods and into a tree. She calls her cousins, and the room turns into a very Rebels World Between Worlds moment, only in an orange color, as her cousins come out, and they are the other four Force priestesses. Altogether, they represent Serenity, Joy, Anger, Confusion, and Sadness. They bicker about why Yoda is there, while Joy is happy that Yoda is there, and oh my god, it was this point in my notes that I was typing this that I realized this is the Star Wars versions of Pixar's Inside Out.
Or it's got a little Shazam in there too, you know, except it's Shudsgax. But maybe if he took the first letters of Serenity, Joy, Anger, Confusion, and Sadness and said them all, he'd turn into some sort of super being.
Well, no, for me it was like, you have Serenity and Joy, and all you needed was, like, disgust instead of Serenity. Yeah. And, like, because Joy is a character in Inside Out, so is Sadness and Anger. And then Confusion and Serenity could have been Fear and Disgust. And I was like, oh my god, it's Inside Out! But with the Force!
It was,
oh god.
It was reminding me a little bit of, and I want to say it's Piers Anthony who is the writer. It was a series of fantasy books called, I can't remember the name of it, but it was about immortal characters who were different aspects of death and, you know, life and stuff. And might have been something of immortality. But, as soon as I saw them, I just thought these are aspects of one entity, you know, five different aspects.
Yeah. Anyway, Yoda says that he wants to learn how to manifest his life after death, and Serenity says Yoda's destiny is set. It's up to Yoda to decide. And Yoda says that Serenity says that Yoda has to learn because he will teach one, aka Luke, that will stop the great imbalance in the universe. For that, Yoda has to learn this gift, He has no idea what he's getting into, so therefore he can't be afraid. And the priestesses say a blessing. We are one, and one is all. Very Churrit from Rogue One, if you ask me. And they whirl around Yoda, and the training begins. He wakes up back outside in the wilds and asks Serenity what this place is. It's the foundation of life, where midichlorians bind the living force into the cosmic force. And she leads him across islands, explaining that, at death, he must know his true self to preserve himself, and then let it all go. She takes him in a big island that holds what he would call evil, or fear. And note that she doesn't call it that. It's just part of the force for her. And she says he must conquer his fear. And Yoda's all smug that he's a Jedi Master, and he conquered his fear when he was like 100 years old. And she's like, that's cute. Shut up and go to the island. And Yoda bounces up to the big island and goes inside another tree. And immediately he hears a voice calling out to him. And it's Evil Shadow Yoda, a.k.a. Gollum Yoda! And Gollum tackles Yoda and says that he's upset because Yoda doesn't play with him anymore. And Yoda doesn't accept the darkness in him. And Yoda spouts that he won't give in to his dark side powers. But Gollum is like, but you sit on a war council and fight in a war, and that lets me grow in you. And they kung fu fight, and it's a tiny battle royale as Yoda beats up on Gollum and vice versa. And Gollum says that he is part of every living life. And Yoda realizes that this is true. There is darkness inside of him. It's part of him, but it's not what gives him power. And he rejects his dark side, and Gollum vanishes into the wind. And remember right before the test, Yoda was all like, yeah, I got this test. I'm a Jedi Master. His dark side was his hubris, which he has beaten. And he has passed the first test. Denying the dark side gave Gollum power. But it was when Yoda accepted that it was there, but still did not let it control him. That's when he beat it. What do you think of Act 2, Chris?
Well, that exact little lesson was one of the things that I wanted to put in my Yoda animated feature that Lucasfilm should make, not fan fiction. And they handled it really well, but you know, for all his hubris, Yoda did it in about what, 3 minutes?
Yeah, I feel like if this wasn't a 22-minute show, it would have been a lot longer.
Yeah. But
I mean, you can't help
it. Well, it felt about right, you know, but when he brought up the whole, you know, you said on war councils, Yoda, that's the one of the, like, at the heart of the story I wanted to tell of, like, yeah, Yoda might have fought his dark side and did that early on in his career, but that doesn't mean it's not still there and that he hasn't been getting involved with lots of stuff that I'm sure we're feeding it, you know, in the course of that war, you know, that he was just picking up little piecemeal, you know, until it was adding up. So at the end of the war, Yoda was filled with some force junk, bad force mojo. But that was really all I had. I mean, I really loved this part. It was sort of more of a, more of what I expected out of Yoda going into the tree last episode. And I like that you know, it seems universally throughout force power stuff that there's trees that are sort of the things that you know, are the strong lightning bolt points of it too. So, you know, every place where you have like force stuff going on, you got an evil tree in a good spot, you know. Like that.
We actually, that comes up again in Shattered Empire, which was a comic leading up to The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about Poe's parents, and mm-hmm. Poe's mother actually goes with Luke to rescue a Force tree. And it was one of the last Force trees from the temple that had been taken. And Luke was like, we need to save this tree. And then again, we saw another tree in Last Jedi that was very important.
It might have been that tree.
We talked about that in our Last Jedi commentary. It wouldn't have been old enough. I was very upset. But, like, yeah, like trees in the Force are really important, because we saw it with the Darkseid cave, because it's built into a tree, and then we see trees here, and they're all doors, and trees are very important, man. Save the trees.
And just visually, this episode is, every second is just lush. I love the scene where they're floating over there, and she's just floating above the ground, and he's got to jump from sort of like, you know, poofy mushroom, floating mushroom to poofy floating mushroom, and there was a really nice sense of, like, of mass to those mushrooms when he would land on them. It was just really neat.
Yeah.
Well conceived and executed.
Well, for me, I have a lot of notes. This is the section with the most of my notes. I like that the wellspring of life has an island of evil and fear, and Serenity even says that it's what Yoda would call evil and fear. It's not what she, a Force priestess, calls it, because evil and fear are just part of the Force as well, so, like, she just accepts that evil and fear are part of the Force, but it's something that, like, he would call it evil and fear.
Right. Well, she's in a larger reality. I guess the larger reality you get, the more things just sort of, you know, you see the perspective to where things are all more integrated.
Yeah. All right. Which leads me to a really big note. Let's talk about balancing the Force for a second, guys. Because we have our light side users and our dark side users, and they're all running around right now in the Clone Wars. And we have Anakin, who is supposed to be the balance of the Force or whatever. And he's in the camp of the light side, and then later in the dark side as Vader. And these are all, like, old Jedi and Sith things, which have, like, thrown off the balance. And we know from what Dave Filoni said in the extra information that I was reading before, is the Force priestesses were originally one person who split into five beings. She is the personification of the Force. All of the Force. She is Serenity, Joy, Anger, Confusion, and Fear. The Force is all of those things. And who tends to have all of those features at once? It is our new Jedi that we see post-Order 66. It's people like Kanan and Ezra and Luke and Ahsoka after she left the Order and Rey. They all hold these qualities, and we've seen all of these qualities in them at one point or another within themselves. Which then brings me back to the fact that I argue that these are the best Jedis and the most balanced Jedis, and the new ones have the most balance out of the Force because they have all of these qualities of both the light side and the dark side of the Force. They don't choose one or the other. They embrace all of the qualities, which to me make them the most healthiest Jedi we've ever seen in the franchise.
Yeah, I think there were other Jedis maybe to compare to them, and maybe that's way back in the, you know, way beyond the prequels Jedi, that there were Jedi like that, and then it evolved away from that, you know, or it still held all that stuff, but when you become this major giant thing, you know, plus there were so many Jedi, and once you're down to a few, you're just pulling out the most, you know, when you're just getting those few Jedi type people, they possibly either are going to be more balanced or completely more unbalanced, say like Kylo Ren later on.
But
and I think that's sort of the reason the Jedi got wiped out, is so you could clear a space for these new Jedi that are more in line with the Force, you know, than being a Jedi, you know. As they became the Jedi, it became more important to be the Jedi than it became to really be truly, you know, at balance with the Force, you know, not balancing the Force, but being a balanced, you know, practitioner of the Force.
Yeah. I mean, like, I just look at somebody like Ezra or even Luke, because they both do this as well. I mean, they've experienced serenity and joy. They've had anger and confusion, and they've also experienced great sadness. And they are all these parts of the Force in one, and it's really wonderful about how these, like, new Jedi are really not shunning the dark side because they understand and know that it's just as important. And, I mean, we even see in Last Jedi, like, Luke was like, "You're too dark, Rey," and then later on he's like, "No, it's like it's needed. Like it needs to be both." And it's really wonderful. So, like, I love these new Jedi. Like, they're probably my favorite. Like, don't get me wrong, I love me some Obi-Wan. Like, Obi-Wan's probably one of my favorite Jedi. But, like, these new Jedi, like, are so well done to encompass.
Well, I look at them as almost like the product of Obi-Wan in a way, you know. The
yeah.
Obi-Wan was the generation before him that was sort of on that same level, you know, compared to the other Jedi.
That's true, because in a way, like Kanan didn't have probably much interaction with Obi-Wan, but he had interaction with Ahsoka, and Ahsoka did learn from Obi-Wan. Of course, then those were both in part, like, given to Ezra, who met Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan taught Luke, and then, in turn, Luke taught Rey.
Right, so, and like, Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon were sort of away from as much the dogmatic edge of the Jedi that you'd say you would find in, like, Wet Blanket Windu.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, we talked about the clone dogma, like Windu is the dogma of the Force.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting cliff note. They're also getting cliff notes of Jedi training, which is just the most essential basic Force stuff, you know? And yeah, maybe that's about all you should get as a Jedi, because, you know, being trained from a little kid up into your, you know, all through your life, it's just, you know, at some point you're just like practicing skills and stuff and maybe learning history, and you're adding a lot of baggage onto it, it seems like. So maybe the Jedi were overeducated. They were putting too much into their Jedi-ness instead of, because the rest of these great Jedi, you know, post Obi-Wan, have all been trained on the fly, on the run, basically.
I was about to say, like, yeah, like, these five have the most real-world experience. Kanan and Ahsoka had to learn how to survive on the streets after Order 66, and they both almost died because they didn't have proper training and they had to learn the real world. Ezra and Luke were raised in loving families for Ezra, until he lost his parents. But, like, they were raised in loving families and were exposed to this. And Rey had to survive on her own after she was left on Jakku. I mean, these five have probably more real-world experience than, say, a Jedi that was raised their entire life in the temple, who, like, suddenly just had to fight a war for, like, 3 years. Which is real-world experience, don't get me wrong. Like, war fighting is definitely real-world experience. But it's, like, there's a difference between being raised from a baby in a temple, which is pretty much like going to Hogwarts your entire life, and then fighting a war, than somebody like, yeah, Luke and Ezra, raised in a loving family in a very harsh place and having to,
they knew something of life before being a Jedi or being in the Jedi sort of sphere, you know?
Yeah. So. And they had probably the more exposure to people who weren't Jedi, opposed to, you know, like, if, say, like, Obi-Wan went out with Qui-Gon, like, yeah, he probably went to other planets and negotiated stuff. Of course, we know he met Satine. It's different because he always went back to the Jedi, opposed to, like, yeah, Kanan, well, who was like, I'm starving, and I guess I'm a smuggler now. Yay!
maybe the Force is sussing out that the best way to make a Jedi is with a minimal amount of training and then guidance. And then, yeah, not as much, you know, just education and training, you know, just the minimal amount of physical training and Force training, and then just guidance. And it's sort of like critical thinking, you know, you teach somebody to critically think and then they're sort of on their own, you know, they've got the skill set.
And honestly, not to sound too cheesy, but love, because, like, oh, Kanan found love with Hera, Ezra and Luke knew the love of their families, Rey wanted love from these parents that she knew was out there, and then she found love with, like, people like Finn, and then Ahsoka clearly loved Anakin, not romantically, but as a friend. And so, like, and we see that when she faces Vader, when she's standing before him and saying, I won't leave you. Like, it's like all these five, like, Jedi have love, and they've experienced some kind of love and loyalty in their lives, opposed to, like, we see Obi-Wan having to swallow his love for Satine, and she ends up getting killed for it. I mean, and he has to, like, swallow that too and move forward with his life like it didn't happen. And so it's very different. Like, to sound cheesy, like, they've also experienced love. And we know Kanan got some love on because he had a baby.
Oh, yeah.
He definitely got some love on at some point. I have no idea when they had time to have a child. Or when Hera was pregnant, for that matter.
Does it take long? Who knows what their race, she might not even been pregnant. She might have had, you know, she might have deposited some eggs in an urn or a sack somewhere. We don't know.
Though I have to say, nothing makes me happier because, like, in the most recent Star Wars comic that came out, I don't remember what episode it is, Luke's flying around and he's like, we have to give General Syndulla time to leave, or like give Hera time to leave. And I'm like, Luke's talking about Hera. I'm like, this is great. I love it. Love everything about this. So my next note is, you know, all those debates about whether or not Anakin or Luke would be in balance to the Force, and like some people say it's Anakin and some people say it's Luke. Yoda says, or Serenity flat out says to Yoda that he will teach the one who will stop the great imbalance in the universe. That's Luke. Yoda has already taught Anakin. He's done. But he hasn't taught Luke yet. So that does that pretty much put the debate to bed that Luke is actually the one that brings balance to the Force?
I guess it is. But it's, you could argue it either way because they're so tied together, you know? Vader's actions and Luke's actions involved in that. So by the end, it's a cooperative effort of Luke turning Vader. Vader actually does the physical action, technically, by tossing the Emperor. But that might not be what was going to put balance into the Force, because I'll tell you what, in about 20 minutes after that, the Emperor was going to just get blown up anyway. So, you know, I don't think you're ever going to be able 100% put that to bed, you know, but it definitely defines it a little better.
Yeah. All right, my next note. This is a section that has all my notes in it. To me, like, this is an episode a lot like the Saw Gerrera episode that benefits from all the following canon. We know how this impacts Rebels, just like Mortis impacted Rebels. And the Priestess's prayer is very much like Chirrut's in Rogue One. We know Yoda continues to teach Luke through The Last Jedi, and Jedi like Rey learns these lessons. So this, to me, is one of those episodes that I think got better on the second watch, because I liked this episode when it first came out, but it was so much better the second time through, knowing the material that followed it, that built on top of an episode like this.
Because
I saw those Rebels references and I was like, that's a very Rogue One moment and this is a very Last Jedi moment.
Well, I think that stuff is bleeding into the Disney movies too. So this is like digging up some, and you know, you could say, if Filoni hadn't ended up becoming involved with Disney, you would have a weaker case for it. But we're really seeing that Clone Wars, you know, and there's but Clone Wars is also, it was basically Filoni and Lucas. There's a lot of George Lucas in this too. So a lot of the stuff that developed into this ended up going into Rebels, and probably at the same time it was going into Rebels, it was going into, to a lesser extent, The Force Awakens, but also into The Last Jedi and Rogue One.
I was going to say, we know Filoni was on the set of Rogue One to, like, help with, like, story and stuff.
But, and you can tell that they're like, all right, we have to start integrating, you know, deepening our, what we know about the Force, and maybe even have the Force be an evolving thing. And so we're seeing, you know, all through Clone Wars, we're seeing the roots of that, of stuff that would end up, you know, there were shots in here reminiscent of the old, you know, temple rooms that Luke and Rey were hanging out in The Last Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and it's Star Wars. If something's canon, then no matter what other Star Wars is doing it, they're paying attention to it, you know, so they don't either cross streams incorrectly, or, you know, there's certainly, if from a visual style and a visual standpoint, they're gonna wanna draw stuff from like Clone Wars and Rebels. By the time Rebels got there, it's more integrated into the movies anyway. I think they're working more in, you know, not bouncing off as each other as much, but they're doing stuff in Rebels to enhance the movies that are coming out at the time.
And it's gonna be even more when Resistance comes out in like 2 weeks.
Right.
Or actually, no, this week. Resistance starts this week. But, I mean, hell, we have flat out have Phasma and Poe in it, so it's integrating right with the movies.
Yep.
Oh, my God, Resistance is off this week. Ah! It's out on Sunday! Sunday!
It's coming this Sunday, so it's in 6 days?
Yeah, it's, well, by the time this episode's out, it's gonna be
right
out already, but, I can't spell release date. Yeah, it's October 7th, it's this Sunday at 10 p.m.
It's gonna be my Star Wars show that I get to watch without writing notes from now on. That used to be Rebels, but now it's my Rebels rewatch, which means I'll be having my notebook in my hand whenever I watch a Rebels episode.
So excited to get to Rebels. I'm so excited. I can't wait. My next note's another minor one. I like that Serenity, because you know how people, when episode one came out, they were like, what the hell are these midichlorians?
I don't like them. Yeah, they didn't like it. I didn't like the idea of it either, of trying to explain it physically either, but it's still...
I like that she says, though, what your science would call midichlorians.
Right,
because
right.
Because that's not what she would call them. And it's, but she put it in a term that Yoda can understand because he understands what those are.
Right, right.
But, so I think that helps kind of soften the midichlorian thing because it's not what she would call them. Like, there's something else to her, which gives it a more mystical force
right,
kind of feeling
about
to it.
Yeah, they're like the physical manifestation of something.
Yeah, so I like that she explained it that way. Because it actually added a lot more mysticism back into this very scientific thing of midichlorians.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of already answered this. I said, what did you think of Gollum Yoda? Because I was sitting here going, Chris is either going to love it or hate it.
Oh, I loved it. I loved how he looked And I liked that he went from fighting Yoda, and in the end, Yoda fought him by sort of sucking him back into him. That was cool.
And then I have to say props to Gollum for calling out that Yoda is fighting in a war and he isn't above war and that he has all this war baggage. And that I like that his dark side is hubris because you don't all often think of Yoda having hubris. But yeah, he kind of does because he's this big old ass war general.
Well, before he left here and when he was hearing voices in his head and everything, everybody was like freaking out because Yoda was their linchpin. So they're like, Yoda can't be wrong, blah, blah, blah. You know, if you're that guy, it's hard not to have hubris, you know, whether it's, I'm sure he's trying consciously not to, but I think it just like the dark side aspect
like,
that
I'm
is accumulating
the leader
through
of
the
Jedi
war. You can't help it. Yeah. It's just sticking to you like bugs on a windshield.
I'm the leader of the Jedi Order, and everybody turns to me. Wow.
Yeah.
The Emperor turns to me. I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's hard not to ignore that. There has to be, like, a little part of him that's just like, yeah.
If you're going to be the leader of something, especially during wartime, you got to have a little bit of hubris, you know? You can't be sort of squishy and wimpy. So.
Yeah. But that's all I have for F2.
All right. Ready to polish this one off. The happy mortis.
Happy mortis.
It's not really happy, but it's definitely the happier version of mortis. The sunny mortis. It's always sunny in Mortisville.
Chris, I'm so excited for Resistance on Sunday. The
I
more
and
more
was, I did not know it was that soon.
Yeah, the more and more I see of it, I'm just like, this is going to be amazing. I think it's going to have that slow build just like Rebels, but, like, the more and more I see it. Like, we just actually got our first show of, like, Phasma in the last trailer they dropped, and I was just like, yes, queen.
Yeah, Phasma will get to do something.
I know.
Either that or the gag will be that Phasma's always gets, like, knocked out of the picture right away or something. I hope not, though. I hope they make her into a real character.
Me
if they
too.
Got the actress to do it, you know.
Yeah. Okay, now I'm ready.
Smoke it up.
So Act 3?
Act 3.
Yoda's next task is facing temptation. Serenity takes him to another island to go into the Valley of Extinction. He cannot have emotion as he goes forward, and he can't have attachments because he will see the faces, all the faces of the priestesses in one way or another, and they vanish and fly ahead. Yoda goes inside and hears voices, and suddenly, he's back in the Jedi Temple, but it's in ruins. There's dead Jedi and Padawans laying on the ground, and then Yoda hears coughing. And it's Ahsoka! Hey, babe! Well, I miss you! Ahsoka! And she's dying, and she says it was the Sith. And she blames Yoda for expelling her from the Jedi Order, and wonders if she will be one with the Force when she dies, since she's not a Jedi anymore, and blames him for it, and she dies. And Yoda is all woe is me, until... Katooni. Katooni from the kids arc last season shows up, offering to take him away from all of this pain and horror. And he accepts and closes his eyes. And when he opens them again, Yoda is in the garden of the Jedi Temple under the Force tree. And it's peaceful and beautiful. And the Jedi Council and Ahsoka and the Padawans are running around. And Katooni says, "There is no war here. There is never a war here." But something is very, very off about this picture, because in the middle of all the happy Jedi running around is Qui-Gon Jinn and Count Dooku chatting it up with Obi-Wan. And Yoda is immediately defensive with Dooku, but he's calmed when his old Padawan calls him Master, and it's all happy, and they head down to the Force tree. But Yoda stops and realizes it's all a lie. He points out that one of the Jedi is dead. Bera Sophia is there, and she blew up the temple. Ahsoka left, Qui-Gon is dead, and it's all lies. But when he calls out that Count Dooku is a traitor, everything becomes dark, and Dooku's eyes glow red, and he strikes at Yoda with his lightsaber. But Yoda knows it's fake, and he opens his eyes, and Yoda is back at the Wellspring of Life. And Serenity greets him, saying Yoda has done well, but this isn't over. Yoda must spend his life with these lessons, practicing and learning. And Yoda asks who she is. She pulls off her mask, and there is nothing there. Her robes and mask fall to the ground, very Obi-Wan-like. But the Serenity's voice says the priestesses have achieved what he seeks and live between realms, and that she is already dead. And the other priestesses arrive and say that if Yoda is to complete his training, he must face the ultimate temptation and the ultimate test. He must travel to Moriband, the ancient homeworld of the Sith, to face all the evil that Yoda fears. And the other Force priestesses collapse like Serenity into a pile of robes. And Yoda hops in his tiny fighter, picks up R2, and they head off to Moriband for next week's episode. The end.
So maybe like Mortis, Moriband, and, you know, the Wellspring of Life are like the Holy Trinity or something, with, you know, the dark and the light, and with Mortis being sort of like this neutral, weird...
In-between
zone. I really like this one. It was the last temptation of Yoda. Personally, I mean, okay, it's 20-minute Clone Wars cartoon. But for me, these were all easy lessons for Yoda. I knew exactly what he had to do to get out of all of this, all of these tricks, you know.
Yeah.
But that's me watching it, you know, and going like, oh, this is a, you know, I'm not, you, if you get into the character of Yoda, you have the emotions, you know, that like you would experience if all your dead relatives and estranged people were all of a sudden back and getting along, you know, and, oh, okay. But I thought it was kind of easy lessons for Yoda, but for what Clone Wars is, I thought it was perfect. And basically this act was just, this last act for the most part had some really great bordering on horror creepiness to it, especially, you know, once when the point when he was just like, you're all fake, you know, this is all just an illusion and not real, you know, I have to face up to reality, and they all just sort of go limp and start blowing up into the air. Puppets.
I was like, well, they're using their ragdoll mechanics.
Exactly. They're all just puppets that just got their strings cut, and it was really cool and really spooky and creepy. I loved it.
I liked how they used Katooni, like the kid from the kid arc, because she was all like happy and bubbly in the kid arc, but this she was like, there's no war here, Master Yoda. Come with me.
I'm a spooky ghost girl.
Child, yay.
Yeah, I saw the little Wookiee kid was in there too.
Yeah, Gunji.
Gunji, that's right.
Only of the other kids I remember their name is Gunji and Katooni. I don't remember anybody else. Because like one was like Sassy Star Eyes, and then there was Kid Fisto, And then
oh, that's right.
Biff, I do remember Biff because his real name was like B-Y-P-H, but we called him Biff. And there's Goonie. And then there's a little boy that, like, the human boy that was, like, a little snot that was fine. that's their names. Sassy Star-Eyed, Kid Fisto, and Biff.
And it was cool to see, even if it wasn't real, but it was Yoda's memory of what Dooku was when he was back as a good guy, you know? Or at least posing to be a good guy. But it was neat to see a happy-go-lucky Dooku.
Yeah, he was all like, let me tell you a story. When I was a Padawan.
Let's have a beer.
Yeah.
But that's all I really had for that. This was my favorite part of the whole show. My least amount of notes for it. But I liked it a lot. It was really good. And I'm glad that we're sending him to a Sith planet because I felt that there was more. Yoda needs to go through the ringer more. And this will be, I mean, going to the Sith planet's going to be, presumably, this is the penultimate episode of the season, and that's the season ender. That should be, I'm expecting quite a spectacle of evil.
If I remember correctly, it's definitely a thing.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I should hope so.
Well, I've only seen it once, so I don't remember a lot of it. I just remember snippets of it. So I'm actually very excited, too, because I really don't remember that much from it. So, I know there's shadows at some point.
Of course I remember shadows. It better all be blue, black, and red.
Yeah, I think there's a...
Maybe some throw some deep purple in there, too.
I think there's like a person. I really don't remember.
A real evil person.
I guess so. I do remember like a figure person there.
Right. Yeah, sure. There better be.
Yeah, I haven't seen this episode.
The other two, right?
So I haven't seen this episode in over 3 years. So I really don't remember. And I've only seen it once. So.
There's got to be some sort of caretaker of the Sith, and I hope he's just like, oh, hi, Yoda.
Welcome.
Thinking to himself, maybe I could give me a little Yoda on my side. He'd be like the hottest recruiter in the Sith.
Palpatine would be like, what? How'd you do that?
Palpatine would have some serious competition if Yoda decided to go bad.
He'd be like, how did you do that? Not good. Not good.
No.
Well, for me, my first note, I've already said it right in the opening, was remember in season 5 recap when you said you hope Ahsoka would be back? Well, she sort of is. Yay. Surprise.
Sort of. It was just like, the only thing that I took out of that is like, oh, they brought it right to the edge of like, it was like, is she going to say Anakin? But she just said the Sith.
Yeah.
Did all this and she's like the Sith. And it's less like, oh, so it's still a secret to Yoda, which of course it would have to be.
Yeah, though I did like that scene when she was like, it was all your fault that I'm not a real Jedi. You did this to me. And I was like, ooh, just rub that salt in the guilt. Just rub it all in there. Get in there, salt. Salt up that frog. Salty frog.
Yoda drinks to forget.
Yeah. But I also like that the Valley of Extinction has the destroyed Jedi Order inside it. The place is called the Valley of Extinction, and what's inside it? The Jedi Order.
It's about accurate, yeah.
I know. I liked that part. I was like, ha, that's funny. As I said in Act 1, I'm going to come back to this. This episode had a lot of overtones of Avatar The Last Airbender, which again is fitting because Filoni worked on the show. When Katooni says that there is no war, it's almost verbatim to Julie's mantra in Avatar of there is no war in Ba Sing Se, which is like and it's said the exact same way, and it's equally as creepy.
And it's somewhere where there's obviously a war.
Well, yeah, because what it is the whole thing, like the show is like there's a war. The Fire Nation is invading all these other nations. The only place that hasn't been affected by the war is Ba Sing Se, which is the capital city of the Earth Kingdom. And Ba Sing Se has three walls. And the outside wall is where all the poor people live. The inner wall is the middle class with the merchants. And then the inner wall is where all the rich people and the emperor live and stuff like that. And they actually use real world examples from China to like, of like communist China to like shield the people in the inner wall. So they literally don't know that there's a war going on. And Julie is a handler who is there to, like, kind of keep the Avatar from, like, getting close to the queen and stuff like that. And, like, or getting close to the king and, like, letting him know, hey, there's a war going on and we really need the Earth Kingdom. And so Julie is, like, brainwashing people, saying, there is no war in Ba Sing Se. And, like, she's, like, trying to brainwash them. She's like, you're fine here. There is no war.
Repeating the propaganda.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
And it's very creepy and it's very well done. And as also I mentioned, the spirit portals are straight out of Avatar. They just changed the color and made them 3D in a 3D model instead of 2D. It's like straight up the spirit portals. So, but yeah, there's a lot of Avatar overtones in this episode. So I do love seeing the snippet of Dooku with all the other Jedi. We know so little about his life when he was in the Jedi Order. And like when he was a Padawan growing up. And then I started thinking, I would actually love to see like a novel of him starting off as a child, becoming Yoda's Padawan, growing into adult, and then his downfall as a Sith Lord. And I put out the question to a bunch of people, and the only answer I got back was from Aaron about has there been a book about Dooku's life in the Jedi Order? And he said, I think the book Dark Allegiances covered Yoda and Dooku as a Padawan. But even then, like, he's not really sure about that. And I'm like, that would be a great book of, like...
Dooku was Dooku probably a fun kid. Jedi.
Yeah.
He was probably more on the Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon tip. He was probably more, you know, a little more like, I enjoy life, too.
I think he would have a little bit of, like, Anakin in him, though. And what I mean by is, like, he's trying to think these bigger pictures, but the Jedi are quelling him.
And he's got a little more Machiavellian sort of bent to him on top of it where Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon didn't have that.
Yeah, but like I would just love to see a novel in the new canon of Dooku as a kid being chosen as a Padawan, being raised in the Order under Yoda, and then like his fall to the dark side. Like
I would have liked to see Dooku past Yoda in his Jedi career, like, because I'll bet you like he would have been fun to go on an adventure. He would have been like, he would have gotten along with Hondo, basically. He would have been very dignified, but he would also have been able to go into a cheesy bar or, you know, a dangerous bar and win the respect of the locals. And maybe even, I'll bet you he was a singer because he's got that rich voice.
Yeah.
Bet you he had a couple drinks and would like lead people in song. That's the you know.
So that is a chunk of like Star Wars canon that we don't have that I would really, really like to see. But I also think it's like really telling, continuing Dooku, about Yoda seeing Dooku happy in this like happy Jedi vision. Because I think he has probably a ton of guilt about Dooku's fall. That was his Padawan.
And
I bet it's something he hasn't been able to express, because we know that the Jedi suppress their emotions and they swallow these feelings. And like when he's like, Dooku, and Dooku's all like, oh, master, hi. Like Yoda automatically drops all his defenses, and because he wants that time back with his Padawan. And you know that he like that's something he misses. It's a really well done like 15 seconds.
All right, so I'm looking at your next note and wondering, what the hell does that mean?
Oh, so is this a good Mortis episode, or is this Mortis bad for an episode, or a really good episode?
Oh, yeah, obviously really good.
Yeah.
This feels way more Star Wars compatible to me than Mortis did.
Yeah, I mean, I have two parts.
Makes Mortis a little better, you know what I mean?
I can see that. Like, for me, like, I think this is executed better than Mortis. Because that's what we always talked about. Like, Mortis is a good concept, but it's executed really poorly.
Yes.
Because in Mortis, it was like, look, Anakin, you're going to be Darth Vader, but now you forget about everything.
I wanted to see and Yoda doesn't have to forget about anything in this. They don't have to pull it. So far, they haven't pulled anything dumb like that, you know?
And honestly, they're not telling Yoda anything he doesn't know. He knows that there are Sith out there looking to destroy them, and he knows it, but
his worst fear would be that they kill all the Jedi, too.
Yeah, and, like, it's not them saying, hey, Yoda, it's Palpatine, and now you forget about it. Like, it's still vague, but it's executed much better than Mortis ever was.
That's why I was sitting there when he was like, who did this, and Anakin, and to Ahsoka, and I was like, please don't say Anakin, because then I would know that it would probably have to end in some sort of, you know, Yoda forget, you know, getting told to forget everything, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is, because I like the concepts of Mortis, and I want to see them, and now I get to see them in a context that I like, in a frame that I like.
Yeah. And my only other note is something I kind of already said before. Watching this episode the first time, I liked it. I thought it was really cool. I liked it better than Mortis. But the second time watching this, it really benefits from the material that follows. It's like with the Saw Gerrera arc. Like, we just get these cool ideas, like setting up these like big Force ideas. But because of Rebels, Rogue One, the original trilogy, which this was built on top of, and now the new trilogy, this episode holds so much more weight to it, and it becomes a really important episode. And I watch it, and I can see where those other sources are drawing from, and it makes me, like, to me, like, this has become one of those, like, important episodes of Clone Wars up there with when I was saying that the Saw Gerrera arc is suddenly one of the most important episodes of Clone Wars. This is another one of those, and it's because of the material that followed it, which made this episode go from, yeah, it's an episode with cool Force ideas, to this is a really important episode of Clone Wars.
Yeah, this has tendrils that reach out in all directions.
Yeah, both forward and backwards and top.
Forward and backwards, yeah.
Yeah. But that's all I have. I don't have anything else.
You ready for me to score this up then?
Yeah, score it up, Chris.
I gave this one a 9 out of 10.
Woo!
Yeah, I really liked it. I probably will end up watching it again. I'll probably end up watching the 3 episodes, or at least this one and the other one a couple times, because I like them. I want to soak in all the stuff.
Yeah.
All the stuff. I want it.
I do suggest going into the trivia for this episode and into the episode A World Between Worlds from Rebels, because it has references from this episode. That's where I actually got some of my references from. And I was, like, deep diving into Wikipedia, like, clicking every link, and I kept coming back to Rebels stuff, which I put in my extra information notes, like, why I kept bringing that up, because every link that was in this somehow connected back to Rebels. So, yeah, which is the reason I scored the episode the way I did. I really love this episode. It's woven into the bigger fabric of Star Wars. I think it's better than the Mortis arc, and it's executed better. And I really do like the concept of the Force priestesses. We really haven't talked about them that much, but I like that they were all kind of like one being that's split into 5, and how they put the new canon on top of this episode. And it's become one of the most important episodes of Clone Wars from here on out. So I also gave it a 9 out of 10.
Excellent.
We're right on target with each other. Yeah.
For once, I know.
I know, right? Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review the show, it helps people find the show. And this week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, The Rise of Clovis. And I realize the last time you read a note by me, you didn't use my voice.
I'm totally using your voice because it starts out, it gives me, you know, it's funny you're saying that because I was just reading it just now and going like, oh man, that just tells me how to read Hope's voice.
I know. So I got it. You didn't do it last time.
I know where you're going with that, and I'm way ahead of you. Well, just a little ahead of you.
Okay.
All right, but first, before we get to Hope's, we have to see what spawned that. And that was a Facebook post by Gene Hendricks, the podcasting machine.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Gene. All right.
Gene.
that was sort of the Paul Kelly Gene. Yeah. All right, so Gene says, Hope, you made the quintessential argument against prequels of any kind in this episode. Essentially, we know what's coming, so all the drama was sucked out of this, or blown out of it if it was in space. My feeling is that, unless it is done really well, prequels should not exist, because they cannot, by their very nature, move the story forward. They can fill in backstory, but that's pretty much it. The only time when this isn't the case is when you're talking about characters. that don't exist in the original. Hence the Rebels cast gets much more drama, as do Rex and the other clones, than Anakin and Padme, because we don't already know their ultimate fate.
I can absolutely agree with that, because in Rebels, every time something happened to Rex, I was like, oh God!
That's why they had to come up with new compelling characters that we liked.
Yeah. Actually, that's such an... like, I watch a lot of Star Wars Explained. They're one of my favorite YouTube. I'm actually a patron of theirs on Patreon. And they are constantly going, yeah, the adaptations are great, but can we have, like, brand new content with brand new characters, please, when it comes to comics?
So we can feel some tension? Yep.
Yeah, and that's why the Dr. Aphra comic is so good, because she was a brand new character that came out of the Darth Vader comic, and now she has her own comic, and it's all new stuff, and it's crazy bonkers, and it's amazing.
Okay, so now you're answering in real life, but we got to get to your answer off the internet.
Okay.
So then Hope Mullenix said, oh, totally. We made that argument before, and that's why it's so nerve-wracking watching Ahsoka and Rex in episodes. At the time, we didn't know what was going to happen to them, and they built all the tension around them. I'm not going to do that for every line. I'm sorry. I keep thinking back to Boba Fett episode where Anakin and Mace are trapped under a ship and R2-D2 has to save them. You know they're going to be okay. The only way that actually works is if you have someone who has never seen Star Wars start from the beginning and watch it chronologically. And then Anakin and Padme scene works.
Yeah.
I have to work on it, but I got the Hope Mullenix working. I know where I'm going with it.
Oh, yeah, with Paul C. Kelly.
And now, I don't have a Delmore in here, at least, so I'm not getting the full workout this month or this week. But we got Paul C. Kelly and says, although Anakin in this episode is at his worst, creepy Clovis makes Anakin look good in reference to his moves in Attack on the Clones when he was giving his have pity on me speech to Padme and making the fruit float.
To clarify, Anakin is not good. Neither of them are good in this episode.
Anakin's a creepy fruit floater.
Yeah.
That sounds... yeah. Anyway, moving on. Anakin actually stops when she says stop in that movie. I think her exact words are, wait. The Munns are definitely an overall good species. In the novel Darth Plagueis, Plagueis is a Munn, and actually hides his Sith identity from the other Munns and lives in secret as Palpatine did. Yeah. Have not gotten to the part where, I don't know why I would say yeah to that, but okay.
But yeah.
Have not gotten to the part where Palpatine meets him and becomes his apprentice, but that will be interesting. Interesting, although Legends, but Moonalist was pulling a lot more strings in the galaxy at that point in time. I don't know what that sentence meant. Although the best episode of this arc, the arc itself, is my least favorite of season 6. Yes,
I would agree with
Jar
that.
Jar Windu is slightly ahead.
I would actually really agree with that. Like, Clovis is pretty much the worst arc of the series, but even then it's not bad, it's just not great.
Mainly the reason was I knew their fates like you mentioned and saw it as a jealous soap opera story. Ooh, no. Never cared for Clovis in this or the previous arc. Interesting he became head of the banking clan, though.
I like your little George Takei. Ooh, no. We didn't choose candy again.
No, we didn't. Well, we're getting less to choose from. What are you thinking?
Actually, that's probably a good thing, because after next week, we don't have candy again till Rebels.
Oh.
I know, because we'll do our episode recaps. Our candy
level is about right for that, then. So yeah. We worked this perfectly with Dario.
I have the Pau de Mel. It's a big white square.
The what?
The Pau de Mel. It's a big yellow square thing.
Yes, okay.
So if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's dumb. And our friend Dario, who is Chris's co-podcaster from Eat It and Beat It, is a flight attendant, and he sends us candy from all over the world to review. And this week is from Brazil. It's the Baduco, I'm so sorry, I don't speak Portuguese, Pau de Mel, which stands for bread with honey from Brazil.
It's spicy smelling. It's got a little gingerbread smell to it.
I haven't opened mine yet.
It's like a little star gingerbread donut coated in chocolate.
Oh my god, I love gingerbread. It's fall. Oh my god.
Can you smell it?
Yeah.
Smell that?
Oh my god.
It is gingerbread.
Oh my god.
I love gingerbread too.
It tastes like fall.
It's chewy gingerbread, not crunchy gingerbread.
It tastes like fall. I'm so happy right now. Because we were talking before the show, or maybe we were talking during the show, how hot it's been down here. And I'm like, I just want to be a white girl with my pumpkin spice latte. And Chris was like, you can drink a pumpkin spice latte. I'm like, it's not the same, Chris. It's not. It's too hot.
Gingerbread gets way into, like, Christmas time flavors for me. But, I was definitely not what I was expecting from this at all. It's delicious. I've never had gingerbread. The chocolate isn't very strong. It isn't like strong chocolate. So the gingerbread is the dominant flavor, but I've never had gingerbread dipped in chocolate before.
Oh my gosh.
And it's a good thing.
Actually, my old coworker Alicia used to make chocolate chip cookies, but she would put like candied ginger in the batter.
Ooh.
So it was so good, but just like, I think like a little bit of like cinnamon too. So it was like, it tasted like winter because it was just chocolate chip cookies with candied ginger mixed in and baked, and they were so good.
Ginger was like one of those flavors I never really cared for, and gingerbread never tastes really, because it's made with powdered ginger. It doesn't have that fresh ginger taste. But then as I got older, like from my 40s on, I can't get enough of it. I love drinks that have ginger, so much ginger in them that they're kind of spicy. You know what I mean? Yum, yum, yum.
Oh, man.
Good for your digestion.
Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at tutufreaks.com. And run fast as you can. You can't catch me. I'm the gingerbread man.
Dipped in chocolate.
But I will always lead you to the tutufreaks.com page, where we have all our podcasts, where they all live nestled together, talking nerd stuff. If you go to Facebook, we have a Facebook presence. We got Two True Freaks on Facebook. We got a main page that just sort of tells you what shows are coming out on what day. And then we got the Two True Freaks Cantina, which is just sort of a forum for talking nerd stuff. We are also on Twitter, where the aforementioned Gene, the podcasting machine.
Dun, 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 Gene.
Runs that. Runs it like a clock. Like, yeah, a well-oiled machine.
I wake up every Wednesday morning and there's Jay Guys and Jedi, and I'm like, whoa! You
did that before I woke up. The well-oiled machine.
Well, I was going to say squeak, so he squeaks, so he squeak, Gene, but then I'm like, wait, he's well-oiled.
He's well-oiled, so he doesn't make any noise. It's just a few little clicks and
it's
whirs.
Just like, I hope your silence cutter doesn't catch this, but it's just like,
he makes an occasional spinny whir sound, like or something like that, you know.
Oh no, I was just gonna be like silence and then say Gene, but then I was like, wait, your silence capturer would like cut that out. Like 5 seconds of silence and then
yeah, we would have to artificially put it in there. But that's where you can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account, and you can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I'm also working on getting my website, geekygirlexperience.com, back up. I mentioned it last week. Hopefully by the time this episode comes out, it'll be up and running, but we'll see, because it's been a crazy 2 months for me. And I'm also a fanfic writer. I have several Star Wars fanfictions on Archive of Our Own, or AO3 for short, under the name Chaos Lydia. My main fic is, of course, Forces of Gravity, which is a Thrawn fanfiction, because my blue husbando, and I love him. And actually, I'm working out of my boss's house now, and I saw that he had the new Thrawn novel on his table, and I was like, Brad! And I picked up, I'm like, my husband! And he was like, I have regrets about hiring you. And I was like, no, you don't understand, this is my husband. I'm reading Forces of Gravity. I write Forces of Gravity. I'm also the beta reader for Valkyrie Strike by my friend Megan. She actually just posted a brand new chapter yesterday, which I still need to promote, but I've had a long day and I haven't got to it yet. And I think last week I started doing fanfic recommendations, so can I do another one?
Sure.
Oh my gosh, which one am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? I don't remember what I did last week. I don't remember what I did last week. Actually, I know which one. It's a one-shot, and it's very long, but it gave me everything I wanted out of Season 4 of Rebels that I didn't get. And I'm pulling it up right now. It's called The Care and Keeping of Ex-Imperials Who Need a Coffee, a Nap, and a Hug, in that order. And I'm going to spell your name. It's A-K-A-P-A-R-A-L-I-A-N. Aka Paralian. And what it is, it's the five crew, ghost crew members from Rebels reacting to Kallus and how they're dealing with him as a brand new person on, like, in their crew. So, like, between, because we know Season 3, like, Kallus left the Empire and joined the Rebels, but we didn't see that, like, in-between section where he was adjusting to life. And it was, like, it's them, like, dealing with this ex-Imperial and, like, all this baggage, you know, because he was their enemy for 3 seasons, and now he's their ally. And it's over 8,000 words long. It's almost 9,000 words, but it's a one-shot, and it's really great. So it's called The Care and Keeping of Ex-Imperials Who Need Coffee, a Nap, and a Hug, in that order. And it's awesome. I love it. So if you want to read, like, a nice one-shot that's Rebels, it's just, it's a lot of fun, and I can't remember. I can't recommend it enough. I've actually read it multiple times. So, yay!
Excellent.
Oh, Chris,
that's my favorite part, was where you talk about where you are, because then I can eat my candy. I can just sit and eat it.
What did you say? I'm sorry?
That's my favorite part, is when you do the talking at the very end, because then I can just listen and eat my candy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Chris, we have one more episode of Clone Wars at the moment.
This would have been, until just a couple months ago, this would have been the end. But now we don't have to, now, isn't it funny though? Don't you not feel that, like if we didn't know Season 7 coming up, even though Rebels is coming, I'd be like, oh, this is it, the end of Clone Wars. But I know it's just a little break.
Because we were talking about doing the unfinished episodes, but even then, like, they're the unfinished episodes. Like, this is the actual, like, used to be the actual official end of Clone Wars, but now it's not anymore. We have more to look forward to.
And when we get to the end of Season 7, we might be just like, I'm not going to trust that that's going to be the last of it.
I wouldn't be surprised if we have more material, like in books and comics.
I remember Futurama. I remember Family Guy. I know it can happen.
Yeah. And so, keep happening. I mean, it's such a fan favorite. I mean, so well, one more episode and Yoda's going to Sith Land.
I know. I'm really looking forward to it.
Is Sith Land like Disneyland, but it's just terrible?
The Sithly Land. Yeah.
I actually have an enamel pin of Yoda sitting on It's a Small World.
Yeah, that's a lawsuit just waiting to happen.
Well, it was, I can't remember if it was right after the Disney buyout or right before the Disney buyout, but, oh gosh, it's all the way over here.
I'm just saying, Yoda shows up in It's a Small World and there's going to be trouble.
Yeah, it's called, it says on It's Small World After All It Is, and it's Yoda sitting on the ride. Sorry, love, this is the only one I have of this one, so unless I find another one, you're not getting this one.
Bad.
Yeah, unless, I don't know. Well, maybe, we'll see, because I've actually almost sent this to you like 4 times, so I was like, oh, it's the only one I have, though.
It's okay, Hope, I've got plenty of stuff, so, all the little pins, you know, they don't take up much room.
Well, this is actually I'm looking at the back of it now. It was made in 2012, so it was post-Disney buyout.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so.
Makes sense.
Oh, man. Next week, the last episode!
Get ready.
Yeah, it's coming! It's coming! And Yoda's coming, too. Bye!
All right, we're going out on that.
Yeah.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at 2TrueFreaks.com to shop there.
If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Sock it to me?